The following podcast is taken from my video blog, which you can find under the same name and the Recruitment Podcast channel on YouTube.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Recruiter Zone's live chat. This is going to be a lively show. I have a fabulous guest today who is going to probably behave himself, possibly not. Who knows?
I'm going to behave myself.
Okay, so I'm going to let you introduce yourself. I'm just going to move myself to the other side of the stage because what I'm going to be doing is checking everything's okay on LinkedIn and then I'll pop myself back on. So if you want to introduce yourself, let us know what Davidson Gray do and I'll leave you for a minute to do that.
Well, I'll keep it short because when I've watched this kind of thing before, not necessarily yours, I've got so bored of people doing the intro, I switch off. Then you get 3 minutes of somebody papping on about themselves. So I'm not going to pap on about myself. And bore people because I'm sure the people that watch you want to get on to the subject matter, not listen about me. But quickly, I built two recruitment companies over the course of 12 years, sold those, set up Davidson Gray. Davidson Gray now support startup recruiters. That's what I do. Support team, do all the back office, the accounts, the marketing, pretty much everything that allows the recruiter to recruit, hire staff and manage the staff themselves. But the difference is I keep the partners I support, the group I support, very small. Because their first hire is me as a co-director. So it's not scaled. I am actually working director. I don't just coach and mentor. I actually do some of the jobs that the would-be MD would do. So the people that I work with don't have to be a 360 MD. They could be a 180 or a 90, and then me and my team pick it up. Apart from Davidson, obviously I'm an international media star with my YouTube channel and my podcasting. And my 3,000 readers every single month of my blogs, which I may have mentioned more than once.
Superb. And I meant to mute myself. I was click-clacking away. I do apologise for that. But I have put your links over on LinkedIn. Hi to those of you who are watching on LinkedIn. If you're saying hi on LinkedIn, join us on Crowdcast. The link is there. If you're watching us on Crowdcast, say hi in the chat. And if you want to find out what Reese does, there's a link down here. So I have got, I don't know, 7 questions. Let's see how we get on with them. The first one is... why did you pick this? What is the topic and why did you pick it?
Well, it's a loose one on why most recruitment businesses failed. But I picked that because it just can go off a different tangent. There's very little that we can cover in great detail in 30 minutes. But you know, I've got a passion about marketing, a passion about cash flow, a passion about growing successful businesses. But the statistic that, I don't know, do you know this? How many recruitment companies fail? Because that statistic I always use is 4 out of 5 fail within the first 2 years. And that's something that I understood to be true. I don't know if you know if that is still about right.
4 out of 5, that is absolutely shocking. So 80% of people who set up a recruitment business, it doesn't pan out how they thought.
In the first 2 years, that is apparently a statistic.
Okay, so I'd be really interested to hear what other people think about that. I suspect that a percentage of that 80% of people don't need recruitment entirely. So they realise doing it alone isn't for them and they join some other venture still in the recruitment space. I find it hard to believe they would leave recruitment entirely. I don't know what you think to that.
I think what it is, that the 4 out of 5, they fall into a number of categories, but I think there's a fair chunk of people that's jump into it and wing it. And they just don't bill enough. You know, because I get a lot of inquiries from people that say doing 100 grand a year, 120 grand a year, been in recruitment a year, think they can do it. Mm. There's a lot of difference between working in office and working on your own. And a lot of it can be the mental thing of people just struggle to work on their own, or they just want to have a lifestyle business. Well, after 12, 18 months, that lifestyle can start to get a little bit carried away. You play a bit too much golf, you watch too much Sky, and it just get a bit boring. So what I say to the people looking to set up is, It's critical the first year or two to hire your first 1 or 2 staff, because that keeps you interested, keeps the sort of peer pressure, gives you something to do. It prevents that stagnation when you start to go backwards. Because what I have seen in some businesses is where they try and hire the first person, the second person, it doesn't work out, and they give up. And then it gradually tails off and they end up getting a job again.
So I guess there's a percentage of people who start a recruitment business thinking this is going to be a lifestyle business. It's just going to be me. And they're never going to be unhappy with that. But if you don't bill enough, it won't work as a lifestyle business. And if you build a business to grow, what you're saying is one of the reasons you fail is because you're not growing fast enough. You're not continuing to, you're stagnating.
I think the problem is the lifestyle recruiters see it as a lifestyle, and I think that's the wrong mindset. It works well for some people, but some people, you know, it becomes too easy, you know, just to watch Sky Sports play golf or not really do what you're supposed to do, which is why I advise getting a member of staff or two members of staff to keep that peer pressure to push on. But it kind of depends what you want to set out to do, because if you're looking to set out and grow a business, the other thing that catches you is cash flow.
Yeah.
And that's why I did a video blog on it, because if you're working for somebody, you used to take in the cash, sorry, the taxes at source, PAYE. But if you're working for yourself, you pay PAYE, you pay VAT, you pay corporation tax, you pay personal tax, and they all come at completely different times. And when you start up, you don't get your personal tax bill, your corporation tax bill until 18 months, 2 years. So that's a hell of a shock. And if you're used to planning for that because you've been employed, that is what's going to get you by the nuts. Because, you know, without cash, your business is going to stop.
So I've already got a question from Tony. I'm going to just bring it on screen, which is... Oh, hold on, I've done it wrong. What's a 360 biller?
That's the... do the new the business, get the vacancy, fill the job yourself. That is another mistake that startups make, is looking for 360 recruiters, because 360 recruitment is hard, because you've got two skills. You've got the new business and then you've got filling the vacancy. Filling the vacancy is more of a farmer thing. New business is more of a hunter thing. So the easiest thing to do is have a 180, which is just a deliverer. Now, if you set up your own business, the chances are you've got a new business, you've got clients, you've got that capacity. So the lowest hanging fruit is either hiring somebody that you know, so they're a safe bet, or somebody that you can give vacancies to, and all they've got to do is find the right candidates, submit them and manage the process, which is a much easier job. So there's a lot lower chance of failure, because if you get your first one or two hires fail on you, that could be emotionally really hard,
yes,
financially really hard. So your first one or two hires are absolutely critical, which is why I say the best bet is hire somebody that you know that's guaranteed to work with you, or go for a safe bet of somebody that's just going to fill vacancies for you.
So I've got another question. So I've got two questions, which are over from LinkedIn. I'm just going to do the first one. Is it possible to do this without funding? Because you were talking about corporation tax and all the rest of it. Is it possible?
Well, it is if you're working with... A Davis & Gray style business. So if you're partnering with a solution business, I don't sound like a snob. I don't categorize myself in the same way as other back office companies, but you can get funding through other people, so it can be done. But really, ideally, what you want to do is have the cash yourself, and that's another reason where startups fail, is they don't do a good sales forecast and a cash flow forecast, because it's easy to say I'm going to bill you month one or two. Well, you might bill in month one or two, but then it might take a month for the person to start and then a month for the person to get paid. So really, you're looking at 4, 5, 6 months' money. So can you do it without funding? There is a guaranteed government loan system, which I've never been through, as in I've never known anybody to go through. I don't know how difficult it is, but there is some sort of guaranteed scheme to get you a business loan. But if you've got zero cash, zero loan, no access to cash, then your only real option is an investor, which is, like I say, it's a Davis Gray style model, of which there are a few.
Yeah, okay, cool. Now I think this question from Kim, which came in over LinkedIn, would be probably came in when you were talking about, you know, that you find the assignments and then you get a colleague to do the sourcing and the interviews. So I think this question relates to that, which is, how much could you outsource as a new recruitment business?
That's a bloody good question.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there are freelance recruiters out there you can use. It depends on how much you scale it. If you're looking for somebody to manage the whole assignment, that's a fairly skilled job. But if you're looking for somebody just to get CVs, there's various outsourced companies needing you in Africa and so on and so forth. So you can outsource it. My nervousness is on quality.
Yeah.
And that's where I would probably avoid it. It's good to have a capacity outlet. So if you do have access to somebody that you can go to, if you suddenly get an awful lot of vacancies, you have got a capacity situation, maybe a freelance recruiter or a tried and trusted method that maybe you've got internationally. Mm. But it is riskier. And really, when you're looking at your first 2 years, you want to avoid risks like the plague.
Yeah.
Because once you get up and running, okay, that's fine. But the first 1 or 2 years is the cash situation, the survival situation. And also mentally, it's a lot harder because the adrenaline's flowing. You're not used to it. It's a new thing to you. So you want to minimize stress from a positive and a negative point of view, because positive stress does drain you. Mm. Not as much negative, but it does drain you. So try and keep everything fairly safe.
So I'm going to get to my own questions, but I've got a comment from Erica. Erica's over on LinkedIn. I don't know if you know Erica Clifford, who runs Just Recruit.
Yes, I don't know her personally, but we have interacted.
She's amazing. And she's just shared her own thoughts, which is in the early days of her startup, so she ran a very successful recruitment business, we reduced the fee percentage for the ability to invoice on written acceptance. So being savvy, isn't it? Is maybe changing your invoicing, changing your payment terms, because you need that money quicker.
That is a very smart idea. It's offering your client a discount. If you explain to a client that you're a startup, the vast majority will pay you quick anyway, because everybody likes to look at the little guy.
Yep.
So they're probably going to pay you quicker anyway. But that suggestion from Eric is a very good suggestion.
Yep.
But I also stress that if you do offer a discounted rate to your clients, you do put on the invoice and follow up in the email that it's on the basis it's paid within terms, and then chase to make sure that whoever is paying it, whether it's on accounts payable, they know that the discount is based on paid in terms. So they will know they get penalized if it's not paid in terms. And it's something that, as an employed recruiter, you don't think of. But then when you're self-employed, you put it loud and proud on your invoice, you make sure you send to the decision maker, and what you definitely do is get to accounts payable, because they will get the bum kicked.
Yep.
If they pay late and then they get stuck. But I think Erica's suggestion is a very good suggestion to try and increase cash flow.
Yeah. Okay, right. One of my questions, let me just get them on the screen. Okay, so you've given some of the reasons that recruitment businesses might fail. We went off a little bit of a tangent, but let's go the way around and you tell me a few things which you think would separate a successful recruitment business from one of the ones that have failed. What are they doing right?
Well, first of all, it depends what you mean by successful, because somebody asked me this the other day. They said, but what is your best successful case stories, or case studies rather? It's case, but it depends what your success is. Because one of the businesses I've got, the chap that runs it, works 3 or 4 days a week. He's got 4 very, very settled staff. He earns a significant amount of income. He's got a lovely lifestyle balance. Now, is that more successful than somebody who's got 10 staff and he's working 60 hours a week?
Yeah.
There's more risk in it. So it kind of depends what successful is. But not wishing to avoid the answer to the question, it's getting the cash flow right. So you always get the cash flow right. But it's having the discipline to take yourself out of the business to work on it rather than always in it. Because as a recruiter, you're going to go, oh, there's a vacancy, there's a candidate, you know, because shiny, you know, you're always off on chasing, putting out fires and being the hero. But it's actually having that ability to stand back for maybe half a day a week or one day a month and work on the business, because you'll have lots of great ideas, but you won't implement if you're always in the business, which is why I advocate having a mentor, a coach, a non-exec. So you've got somebody who is going to take you out of the business. You're going to put together some ideas. And if you come up with one idea a month, just one, and action it, you're winning. 5 ideas that you don't action is a bag of shit, because you're not going to do anything. So it's just doing that one. So all you need is a couple of hours a month where you're going to work on the business. And that's what gives people the distinct advantage to take the business forward, is by coming up with one good idea a month and making sure it's actioned. And that is the difficult thing as a recruiter, because it's not naturally a recruiter style, because recruiters are always fast, 100 mile an hour. You know, they don't slow down. They're not looking at the medium term and long term. So it's a difficult thing to do. And that is something as a business owner, I learned that rather than looking here, you've got to look here, but look here and look here as well. It's that change of vision that, yes, you've got to look at today to get the money in. You've got to look at the medium term, but then also you've got to look at the business you want to be. So you're being the business you want to be today, so you can be that business tomorrow. And it's that wherewithal to change that vision. But one of the things that I have seen a lot in the successful business owner is that humility.
Okay.
Not thinking you know it all. Because the know-it-alls are the ones that fuck up.
Yeah.
It's the ones that appreciate that running a business is a brand new job. A recruit consultant is a good job to turn you into a business owner, but just because you're a good footballer doesn't make you a good football manager. So it's having that humility that I need to learn, and know I need to reach out, and not thinking I could just wing it, which is what I did for the first 2 years. I just winged it. And I fucked up a lot.
You saying that reminded me that I actually did a show with Erica about a year ago, and she shared some of the learnings from her own business because she runs a software company now. And one of those was that is being prepared to say, I don't know everything. And, you know, I'm not an expert in running a business. I might have been an amazing recruiter and a fee earner and convincer of candidates to take jobs. So Kim said here, stepping out of the business is the thing I struggle with the most. Which is what you're talking about, getting somebody else involved in your business to force you to make time sounds like it's a really important thing.
Yeah, well, I did a blog on it on why every business needs a non-exec. And it's not necessarily because the non-exec knows more than you. It's having that person that you feel a peer pressure to meet with them, whether it's once a month, every 2 months, and agree actions and then feel guilty if you don't do them. So he's having that person there. And I mean, I also did a blog on the difference between training and coaching, because training is very different to coaching. And a good coach helps you develop your ideas and your thoughts. And that's what I try and do with the business owners I work with, is they know their market best. They know what culture they want in the business best. They've got the great ideas. I'm really there to help troubleshoot them, crystallize them, and create an action plan to make them happen. And that's what a good coach really does. So no matter whether you're a one-person band or whether, you know, you've got, I mean, Alan Sugar, he has non-execs, for Christ's
sake. Yeah.
So, you know, everybody benefits from a non-exec. I've had non-execs. At my ex-tutor at Cranfield, a non-exec. Mike Walmsley, who you may have heard of, he's a non-exec. You know, it's having that person to talk to and confide in. Fortunately, the lady I work with there, Mara Grace, she's a great coach for me in helping me crystallize my thought process, because going back to most recruitment business owners are 100 mile an hour. And because you're 100 mile an hour, you won't slow down enough to be able to put those ideas into action. And one of the things I like to say is, often to go faster, you have to go slower. You get all done if you slow down at some point to put the action in place. And then there's time for speed. But on the business strategy, that's when you've got to slow down.
I do truly believe that. And I think that I see a lot of recruitment businesses who don't look, they're very, very focused. They're not looking outside. They're not prepared to take on ideas. I actually think that you can be highly arrogant and successful, because let's be honest, Alan Sugar is, but don't be so arrogant that you won't listen and see what's going on around you.
Yeah, I think this arrogance and confidence are very closely linked, because I've been accused of being very confident, borderline arrogant sometimes, but that's just because I have a lot of belief. It doesn't mean I'm a twat, but it means is arrogance and confidence can get mixed up. Where the business owners that I mentioned before think they know it all struggle is the ones that do think they know it all.
Well, yeah, actually, you're totally right. Yeah, I shouldn't confuse arrogance with being a know-it-all. They're not the same thing at all, are they?
No, it's the ones that struggle, the ones that either won't listen or nod in agreement and then do it anyway. That really pees me off. If somebody asks you a question and then you give them an answer, and they go, yeah, and I ignore it anyway, you think, why the fuck did you ask my question in the first place? Don't ask the question if you don't want the answer. Don't waste my time. No. But it is, you know, it's having that humility to at least listen to a different point of view and admit to yourself if you think that's a better point of view. Because yes, you should have confidence in your own ability. You should have confidence to make decisions, but also have the confidence to understand that sometimes people have got better opinions than you, no matter whether they're an administrator or whether, you know, they're a senior manager. Everybody's got an opinion, and it's about you working with those opinions. Some of the best ideas I've had from the people more at the lower level, the administrator level or resourcer level, because they see things in a different way.
Okay, so two things. Molly said over on LinkedIn, we're talking about businesses failing. I had a freelance recruitment business that failed because the fees for resumes drowned me. So that's about, you know, using external sources. I guess that's, you know, thinking what your costs are going to be up front, being judicious where you spend your money. Somebody else on LinkedIn has asked how they get in touch with you, Rhys. So I've actually put your LinkedIn link into the post, and I'm going to put it here now as well. My next question for you, we're never going to get through all these questions. I think it might be me. How important is it to have a niche?
I've always been a huge fan of niche. I think the days of generalized recruitment businesses are phasing out rapidly. There's still a place for the Nigel Pages and the Hays Montrose and large organizations, but buyers are getting a bit more sophisticated and they want to deal with experts. But you can have your cake and eat it. There's examples within some of the partners that within the Davidson Gray support system. It's that they've started off doing one sector and then they've spotted another avenue for profit. So all we do is open another brand and have a separate brand. So it's the same company, but it's a separate brand. Because there is one company, well, it's one of the companies that I built and sold. We had six different brands for the same company. So we could appeal to different buyers. It was the headhunting organization. So we had London headhunters, marketing headhunters, sales headhunters, UK headhunters. So people were more attracted to them because they were more, for example, a marketing headhunter might appeal to them more than a general executive headhunter. So you can have a different brand. But as far as niche goes, it's just so much easier because you've got more people that are promoting the business through LinkedIn, through phone calls, so on and so forth. It builds your database. So rather than going out looking for new people all the time, your database is growing. You know your market, your clients know you. For me, it's an absolute no-brainer. Where you're going to make the decision is how niche you have it, because there's niche and niche.
Yeah.
So, if you go too specific, you are potentially going to hem yourself in. But I would say it's better to err on that than where I've seen some businesses fail, where they go, right, this is my market. There's another ally. I'll put one person in there, one person in there, one person in there. But they're only generating their own candidates and their own clients. So having more people in the same sector is going to mean you can share the leftovers of the candidates that don't get placed, and you can swap intelligence. You're going to get the benefit of people having heard the business name before. So I would say err on the side of going small, but then when you do expand, go allied.
Okay. I like that. And a couple of comments over on LinkedIn. If you wonder why my eyes are going everywhere, it's because my eyes are going everywhere. So Molly has said that this is going back to setting a business. Working for a company, we were undercutting everyone around us, still no one would buy. I'm a real salesperson. So if you're a recruiter and you don't know how to sell, you can still be an amazing recruiter and be rubbish with clients, I guess, if you're a 180 recruiter.
Sorry, what was the question? Do you have to be a good salesperson to be a good recruiter?
Well, they were not able to sell to clients.
Well, no, because this is when it comes back to the 180. There is one of the businesses that within the Davis Square Group, and they came to me with a challenge that they automatically promoted resources from 180s to 360s. And they said, well, we've got this great resource, a 180 person who doesn't want to be a 360. We're not sure what to do. And I said, well, if your biggest problem is candidate attraction, why do you want to put somebody to 360 role? They really enjoy being, a source for good candidates. Then keep them as that. And I think it's massively undervalued, because if you're constantly getting good candidates, then you've got almost a USP above the competition.
Yeah.
So if you have people that are great at sourcing good candidates, they can be as valuable as a 360. So, but to be a 180, you're selling anyway. You don't have to sell like a salesperson sells. What you're doing is good customer service, world-class customer service, and helping people to buy. And helping them make their own decision is selling.
Yeah.
That's solution selling. So it's not selling as in the features and benefits of why this is a great role, or features and benefits why I'm a great recruiter. It's getting the confidence of the client, being their expert and helping them solve their problem, because recruitment is a massive pain in the ass for clients. It really is a huge pain in the ass. So if you could just provide a solution and give world-class service, that's selling. And that's miles better than selling, as people might think it is. Because people don't like to get sold to. They like to buy. They like people to provide solutions. They want people to take problems away from them.
Yeah.
And that is really what a recruiter should do. So the old school thought that you need to be a great salesperson to be a recruiter, I think, is crap. It's not. It's somebody that understands customer service and how to communicate with a client and gain their faith, and that's different.
So a few more comments. Going back to the niche, being an expert in your field is important so you can live up to the consultant part of your role and provide true value outside of just filling jobs, and I guess being consultative is a way to keep getting those clients coming back to you. And Gavin, who teaches recruiters how to bill more, very interesting, says most organisations in the world work niche. Why would this not apply to recruitment? I think we're saying it does. So let me go to my next question for you. It's nice to have the engagement here and on LinkedIn. Thank you for that. Okay.
Get this, by the way. I thought it was a good newbie having a chat. I didn't realise.
Yeah, no, sorry. They're all well. I'm not letting them hop on screen. So the next question I have is about marketing and branding. And I think we started to move towards that, which is it's not just about selling. So how important is marketing and branding in building a successful recruitment business?
It's not, and it is. 95% of recruit companies are crap at marketing, yet they could be successful. And I did a video blog on it, because the vast majority of recruitment companies are crap at marketing, because marketing is a specialist skill and it means being systematic and process driven. Recruitment business owners aren't. However, the switched on ones that are good at marketing get massive benefits, because it makes your environment an easy place to make money. If you make your environment an easy place to make money, then not only can people make more money, it's easy to attract staff and retain staff. So if you get your marketing right, then you're creating nirvana. Branding is allied to marketing, but it's not quite the same. Marketing is more sort of an outreach thing to attract people, whereas branding is an ongoing, almost image culture thing that is quite often developed by the quality of service that you deliver. And that's where, again, quality service is closely aligned to marketing. But marketing can be a massive differentiator for you, along if your space doesn't have brilliant marketing companies in it. Because to get on, say, a page one of Google, if there's two or three companies that are brilliant on SEO, then you're not going to win. So, you know, a lot of markets, you can get good traction because everybody else is crap, but some of them maybe not so much. Some of them we've tried and we've struggled, and some of them we've nailed it in 6 months. You're just going to be better than the competition. So if the competition is crap, you're winning. If the competition is great, it's going to be harder.
So one of the things you spend a lot of time on is the podcasting and the interviews and things like that. So if you had a recruitment business who were working with you and they were in the pharmaceutical field, and the owner said to you, do you know what, I want to spend 4 hours a week doing podcasts and interviews, would you say yes to that, or would you tell them to wait?
I'd say wait, to be honest. I mean, it all depends on your market. I mean, the reason I do it is because I enjoy it. Because I like to share the experience and knowledge I've got with other people. It's not necessarily to promote Davidson Gray, because Davidson Gray is a size I like anyway. So it's just sharing that knowledge. But you've got to look at your market. If your market is very receptive to you being a thought leader, then fine. But you don't let your ego convince you that that's the case. You've got to look at the return on investment of whether you get traction. So it's when you're looking at LinkedIn, people look at comments and likes, but you've got to look at the views and then drill down the views to see who's viewing you. So if you put pictures of your dog or your wife, or, you know, your first day at school, all that bollocks, then, you know, you might get lots of likes, but is it customers? You know, you're looking to find people that are going to either use you to find people, or they're going to find you a job. Those are the people you're looking to approach. So I'm all up for blogs, I'm all up for podcasts, I'm all into the interview thing, but it's about measuring whether it's going to get you the success that you want. Because you want, with the sort of marketing, obviously that's part of it, it's going through the path of least resistance.
Yeah.
The biggest return in investment. And it's looking at that from a proper subjective point of view by measuring the results to understand what makes the money. Sometimes it can be the boring stuff that makes the money, like PPC. You know, that's a nice, easy thing. You get a PPC expert and you pay for every click. So that's nice and simple. SEO is a bit more complicated. Then you got your podcast, then you got your blogs, then you got your outreaches. It's about measuring what works for your market, because some markets respond really well to SEO, but some are locked out by the big hitters, whereas other ones, they're not doing outreaches. So it's about what's good for your market. But as far as the podcasts and the video interviews go, I would spend minimal time and measure it.
Okay. So someone's just asked me what exactly Davidson Gray do. You made a comment about putting a photo of your dog on LinkedIn. There's a photo of someone's dog.
I have done it, but I've got a beautiful dog. I have a beautiful dog. Okay. I tell you what, I wish I was as handsome as him. I'm so envious. He just sits there, he doesn't know it. And he's just so goddamn handsome.
So what's he called?
George.
Okay, so
good manly name.
So you've got George, but what does Davidson Gray do?
It is set up and support startups. It's recruiters who want to own their own business, have the humility to know that they don't know everything. They want the support. They want to work. The biggest decider is they want to work with me, because our support team is world class. You know, we get 5 out of 5 in all our customer surveys all the time. But it's somebody who wants to work with me as a co-director, as a shareholder. Now, the people who work with me, they're the MDs, they make the decisions. I don't push anything, but I'm there to promote thought and also deliver some of that. So for example, you know, I'm very good at marketing, I'm very good at the finance, two areas that most of the MDs I work with don't want to get involved with. They want me to do it. So Davidson Gray, yes, we provide the marketing, the accounts, do the invoicing, LinkedIn, job boards, CRM, give you all that stuff. So basically you come to us and say, I want to set up a business. We build the infrastructure for you and support the infrastructure. But it's then take it to that next level of growing the business. It's if you're going to sell it, but not necessarily selling it. So it's building it in a way that such that if you do get an unsolicited offer for the business, it's built in such a way that somebody can look at it and go, right, we can seriously scale this because it's well put together. So it's primarily with startups. I have worked with a few very small businesses that realized that they weren't going to get anywhere without working with somebody like me. But primarily it's startups, and we only have 9. So I am incredibly selective. People say, you know, what's part of the criteria? I don't work with recruitment dicks. You know, it's the people that know that they know what they don't know. They want to have fun doing it. They've got the right morals, and they're doing it for the right reasons. I'm not getting spiritual, but you know, I want to enjoy working with the people that I work with. Because setting your own business is stressful, but it should be fun. And that's one thing I didn't do in the first few years is I was so busy and so driven growing the business. I didn't smell the roses. Now, I made a lot of money, but what I didn't do is necessarily enjoy it along the way. So what I try and do now with the business owners is help them enjoy it. But I want to enjoy working with them. I want to like those people and get the buzz off making them wealthy. Yep. And I'm fortunate enough that all the businesses I work with, I get on great with every single one.
And that is a lovely way to work. I like that. Tony's saying, where do you make your money? So how does it work for someone partnering with you?
We take a percentage of revenue. We don't take a percentage of profits, but it's a percentage of revenue. And within that revenue, we supply a lot of support services. So it's the CRMs, it's the accounts, the support staff pays for my time. And it scales such that, unlike recruitment fees, the more the business builds, the smaller the percentage.
Okay.
The more successful you are, the smaller the percentage. Although they're just going to get more money, but it's just much smaller percentage. So it rewards success.
And I'm going to just put up Gavin's comment on the screen because I love it, which is, it is so important to have fun running a business. I tell you what, I would imagine that if you did a happiness rating for lots of early days recruitment business owners, they're going to be scoring really low, aren't they? They are going to be super stressed and not loving it.
It is, which is why if you have somebody that you can set up with, or you have a mentor or a coach or some sort of support system like that, it makes a hell of a difference. Yeah. Because where I struggled is I was constantly learning new things I didn't understand, finding out things I didn't know I needed to understand, constantly fucking up because I didn't know what I was doing, learning from mistakes, and trying to multitask, and it is really stressful. But it should be fun, because for me, going from recruiter to business owner is completely different, because everything you do is for your business. You're not doing it for somebody else. So the crap stuff that you hated doing, like updating the CRM, it's your business. You don't hate it because it's your business. So the adrenaline rush and the fun is much, much higher. Yeah. If you can get the mental balance right, that you are enjoying it, and you're enjoying the up bits and the highs and not necessarily feeling the lows, because it should be fun, because you'll obviously make more money. But apart from that, you know, you only get one life. You know, you spend, when you got your own business, 50 hours a week for the first 6 months doing it. You've got to enjoy it.
Yeah, no, 100% agree. First 6 months or first 23 years in my situation.
Yeah, I do find that most successful recruitment business owners are a bit like me, that if you're not overdoing it, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
And that's not the way to do it.
No. I agree with you. I'm still doing it. Okay, so we are at 25 minutes. People who want to know more, now tell me just in a minute how all the different ways they can get in touch with you and all the different ways they can absorb your content?
Well, the best way to contact me is through LinkedIn Messenger. Just direct message me. If you go to the David Scrove website, that holds the blogs, the podcasts, and the video blogs. You find the podcasts on all the channels, Spotify, so on and so forth. And if you look on YouTube, the channel there, I think it's the Recruitment Podcast with Rhys Jones, or Rhys Jones Recruitment Podcast, one or the other. If you Google Rhys Jones and recruitment, quite often that'll bring up an awful lot. But if you want to go to a one-stop shop, go to the David Scrove website, and that has all of them there.
Wonderful. Okay. And the Davidson Gray website is down here. I won't ask you to point at it because I'm going to guess you'll point the wrong way. Go on, point. I should have done that. Yeah. So check out the website, connect with Rhys on LinkedIn. This is going to be turned into a blog post. So maybe you're watching this on replay and you haven't had an opportunity to ask a question. Get in touch with Rhys, ask him directly. We've also had one content piece from you in the newsletter. We've got something else going on the blog. We use quite a lot of your stuff in the newsletter anyway, so there'll be more to come.
No, well, it's about spreading the knowledge. I don't know how big my library of blogs is now, but it's got to be pretty big.
Yeah.
I think it must be about 40, 50 now. What I try and do with all the content that I do is genuinely good advice. It's not designed to attract business with Davidson Gray, because like I said, the size of the business it is now is a size I'm fairly happy with. It is genuinely to give people help, prevent them from making the mistakes that I made.
Yeah, well, we want to elevate recruitment. We don't need any dodgy activity going on. We should be helping people to be better, shouldn't we?
Well, it's nice to be nice.
Yeah, indeedy. Okay, well, I really enjoyed chatting with you. I wish we could see your whole poster. I can see work. Don't worry, be happy. The world is your oyster. Oh, I love it.
Yeah, that is my wife got that.
Perfect.
And because we've got one downstairs that has Bring Me Sunshine, which is one of my favourite songs, that Morecambe and Wise, Bring Me Sunshine.
Yeah, that would make a lovely tea towel. Anyway, might be ageing myself there. Rhys, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you. Thank you all of you who've joined us here today on LinkedIn or on Crowdcast.